Still want to be the best band in the world?
Still want?
Line them up. Line them up.
This was the scene in Milan, Italy last summer, midway through a year-long sold-out tour of the world's largest stadiums and arenas. After 25 years of touring, most critics say they are as good today as they've ever been.
It's only rock and roll where people are burnt out at 40. I want to see what can happen with a band if they keep their integrity, keep their commitment to each other, and can we create extraordinary music? You know, what would have happened, and I'm not making a comparison because I don't feel worthy to touch their hem, but what would have happened if the Beatles lived and didn't, you know, disappear up their own arses, but actually stayed in contact with the world, were awake, didn't let their money buy them off? You know, I'm still hungry. I still want a lot out of music. Still haven't found
what I'm looking for. You say when people are screaming at a concert, it's not about you, it's about them.
In a funny way, that's right. It's unexplainable what a song means to you. Because remember, songs, it's not like a movie you see once or twice. A song, it gets under your skin. And that's why we abandon ourselves to it. It has a sense of... kind of uplift, getting airborne. Everything feels possible, and maybe more things are possible than we think.
And at every concert, the band tries to make that happen. Before the show, fans are asked to join a campaign to help end world poverty. And during the performance, Bono sings of social justice and argues for religious harmony. Jesus, you, Muhammad, it's true, all sons of Abraham. Bono's passions are shared and supported by the band. Drummer Larry Mullen Jr., bassist Adam Clayton, and the guitarist who calls himself The Edge. The four of them formed their bond and their politics as teenagers in Dublin, Ireland. Larry Mullen wanted to start a band to play in pubs. Instead, he got one intent to take on the world.
And did being Irish have anything to do with shaping the band's social, political concerns?
Yeah, I mean, we lived, you know, all our lives with the terrorist situation in Northern Ireland and with the British Army, and seeing that on the news night after night, atrocity after atrocity. But more than anything else, and for the British folks, Irish people were all terrorists. So when we went to Britain, there was always a lot of resistance to you two, and that's why we came to America.
That was 1980. American music fans embraced them. By 1987, following their masterwork album, The Joshua Tree, critics began to call them the biggest rock band in the world. Tours and CDs since then, including their latest, have added to their popularity. But along the way, they found another calling, the starving, troubled continent of Africa. The band did their part at the 1985 Live Aid concert. Bono continued on behind the scenes and in front of news cameras to lobby world leaders to action.
There was a line I read that you said that I thought I really liked. You said, "I'm available to be used, but I'm not a cheap date."
No, I'm not a cheap date. I'm in the checks business, you know, and not just people signing the checks, but people cashing them. And I'm ready to spend my, whatever you want to call it, the currency of my celebrity, if that's what it takes to get there.
He gets a lot of credit for lobbying President Bush. They've met several times. Today, the Bush administration contributes to one of his biggest causes, AIDS medication for Africa.
People openly laughed in my face when I suggested that this administration would distribute antiretroviral drugs to Africans. They said, "You are out of your tiny mind. There's 200,000 Africans now who owe their lives to America."
And is there a secret to your success, the way you've been able to do this?
It was probably that it would be really wrong beating a sort of left-wing drum, taking the usual bleeding-heart liberal line.
His proudest achievement may have been helping convince the G8 industrial nations to sign an agreement that will forgive over $40 billion in loans to third world countries, 18 of them so far.
And these countries, instead of paying that money, servicing these old debts, can spend it on, you know, health and education and infrastructure in their countries. It's an amazing achievement.
But for all of his success as an activist, Bono remains a rock star at the core. He and the rest of the band have vacation homes in the south of France, the epicenter of celebrity lifestyle.
How did you end up here? I mean, how did you end up in the south of France as opposed to Spain, Italy?
They're very tolerant of loud Irish people here, as you can see. They like to keep a low profile.
Fact is, Bono's celebrity profile could hardly be bigger.
Very good.
I'm here, you're there.
Rockstar sunglasses aside, he dispenses with it as much as possible.
I've seen you at a couple of places, not on tour.
Right.
And you didn't have security around?
No.
You were just sitting in a restaurant?
No.
So when you're not on tour, you don't travel with security?
No.
You don't have a posse?
No, I don't have a posse. Am I missing that? Have you got one? I bet you got a posse.
I don't have a posse. I got a crew I travel with.
I said posse.
I just, you know, I've always, you know, our thing in being in U2 is like, how do you be, but not have to have all that bull that goes with being famous? And so, answer number one, live in Ireland. Okay, that helped.
But okay. We're in south of France.
Answer number two, live in the south of France. Why live in France? Because the French are so snobbish. The French are so into themselves. They don't even notice you.
Truth is, Bono and the band are treated like royalty on the French Riviera and spend as much time here as possible.
I'm afraid we didn't get much sleep last night.
Yeah. On tour this summer, they commuted to many of their European concerts from here. Their ride, a private jet.
The reason we hop out of the south here is because people's families can be based in one place and it's summer holidays, so it means people get to spend more time at home.
We were essentially into the simple life. That's the simple, you know, the simple, no nonsense. Where's that champagne?
Poking fun of themselves is something they do well and often. At the height of their early fame, almost 20 years ago, Frank Sinatra joined in at one of his Las Vegas concerts.
During the show, he stood up. He stopped us and made us kind of stand up and do the wave thing. And we were dressed in, you know, rags, just incomparable sort of.
And he was impeccable.
He was impeccable. And just stopped. He said, "You're number one all around the world." He said, "Look at you. You haven't spent a dime on your clothes."
Today, they do spend millions on their concert production. Every last detail of their sets is state-of-the-art. Even a cappuccino machine under the stage.
This is a nice little perk to have back here.
I think being on the road, it's the little things that make the difference. Yeah.
That goes for the music, too. At the sound check in Spain, it's evident that this four-piece band gets a lot out of their instruments. Part of their secret? Guitar technology.
It's like a programmable switching system, so I can go through any combination of effects.
So if you're playing, for example, what is Meatball?
Meatball is an effect.
So Meatball compared to, say,
Big Muff. Big Muff.
But Larry Mullen makes his job as simple as possible.
You don't do those big drum solos.
I don't do drum solos. It's fairly simple and straightforward. But because I'm not that good, I've got to concentrate quite hard. So there are moments where I look like I'm in excruciating pain.
Mullen and Clayton focus on creating the engine that drives the music. Bono and Edge are the navigators, trying to take each song and each concert to new heights every night. This is where the band's two worlds collide. Their global fame has given Bono a political voice. U2's politics give their music a little something extra.
When it's all said and done, do you think that U2 will be remembered as one of the great rock bands of the era, or one of the more important rock bands of the era?
You know, actually, oddly enough, I think my work, the activism, will be forgotten. And I hope it will, because I hope those problems will have gone away. But our music will be here in 50 years and 100 years' time. Our songs occupy an emotional terrain that didn't exist before our group did. Edge is just simply the greatest musician of his generation. I don't think there's anyone with a brain would argue with that. It's a great guitar player, for sure. He has created a whole different spectrum of feelings and colors that are, that the guitar is capable of. He owns that stuff. That's his. It's like in a color spectrum, he owns like yellow and turquoise and ultraviolet. I mean, he owns them the way some painters can. You know, you think, we're just talking about Vincent van Gogh, he owns that yellow. Well, Edge owns this violet. He's the most extraordinary musician, but also so modest that some people don't talk about it.
Have you ever had a point where you thought that the band might come apart, that it might not make it? I mean, look, I mean, you've been together over 25 years.
Every few years, you know, you start to question yourself. You know, is this really what I want to do? What always seems to happen to me is I'll start saying, well, what do I want to do then? What's next? So I go, well, music, it has to be music. And then it's, well, okay, solo artists, solo albums. And then I think, well, that's just no fun. I know what it's like to be in a band. That's the form which I work the best. So it's got to be a band. So what's the band? Who is it? I can't think of a better rhythm section than Adam and Larry, so I'm going to have to use them. And what about a singer? Who's the best singer I know? And you end up redesigning you too. So I do really think this is the best job I'm ever going to get, and I couldn't think of being with a better bunch of guys.
You a better songwriter because of the three of them?
Yeah. Though songwriting, I don't know if you know how we got to songwriting. Is a high school band, we were just so crap at playing other people's songs that we started to write our own.
Is your band a democratic organization? Everybody gets one vote?
It is. I mean, within U2, the songwriting process is kind of odd because Bono and Edge don't come with finished ideas and the band basically perform it and you know, that's not how it happens with U2. Ideas are brought to the band and the band work over ideas as a band. Some of the ideas that come are more well-developed than others. But really, the band, you know, works together to make the original idea better.
I said yesterday that this band seems to me to be something like a table with four good, strong legs. But what does each guy bring to the band to make it what it is?
I think everyone has an extraordinary array of gifts. And to narrow it down it almost makes it a cartoon. But I think You know, Bono has enormous, enormous energy and enthusiasm and curiosity, and I mean compassion and dignity. And he is one of the master communicators. And he's always been like that. It's just that now it's so much more significant than it ever was, because the type of people he communicates to now, you know, change the way the world is.
Mm-hmm. Adam's like the jazz man in our band. You know, he's just the wild card. You never know what he's going to say, but more importantly, you never know what he's going to play. We have a song called Bullet the Blue Sky. And I always thought it was an odd bass part, but Ed just explained to me recently he's playing in a different key to the rest of us. And that's what creates the tension. Larry is like the brakes. You know, if I'm the, what do you call it, the booster, the booster rocket, because I just want to get there now. And he's the one who's just like, hold on, you know, that planet may not exist. So an honest man couldn't tell a lie. And a very loyal friend.
Larry, describe him for me.
Larry's very straightforward. I mean, he's a star. He's always looked great. I think because he plays drums, there's no grey. You know, something is either in time or out of time, and I think he applies that pretty much to the rest of his life. Something is either right or wrong or true, and he's, you know, he's a very loyal friend. But I think what I know most about him is just, he's just an amazing drummer. I mean, he's a great drummer to play with for 25 years, whether it's in the studio or live on stage.
Bono, the lead singer of U2, is seen both as a carefree rocker and an intensely serious global activist. Which one did you see?
I saw both of them. I mean, Bono is a serious rocker who, when I asked him, do you think that your band will be considered among the best, he just said, among the best? I mean, he thinks that they are the best that have ever played. But he's also a committed political activist, and I think he sees himself in both of those roles. He says, I'm not a cheap date. I will use my celebrity to get what I need for my movement. And he thinks one is as important as the other.
And I understand Bono made a pretty strong comment about the Beatles. Tell me about that.
You know, he said that he had a lot of respect for the Beatles. He said, I cannot touch their hymn, was the way he described it. But what would have happened if they had kept what he called their commitment, their integrity, and not got so self-involved that the band ended and disintegrated and lost touch with people? And the thing that impressed me about U2 was their commitment and their ability to have as normal life a life as you can, having the kind of success, the money, the acclaim, and the celebrity that they do. When they go about, I mean, I've seen these guys without a posse. When they're on the road, they have security. But even within that world, as they're traveling around the world, you know, I see them by themselves. I was at lunch at a restaurant one Sunday when they were playing in New York, and I see Edge walk in with a friend. No posse, no security, came in with a friend, sat down, had lunch.
And how does the band incorporate its politics with its music?
Well, I mean, every show begins and ends, and for the most part is about rocking. I mean, it's just a wonderful band. But at some point in the show, Bono does his thing, where he talks about the human rights violations in the world and the need for the world to respond to the crisis in Africa with AIDS, with his effort to eradicate the huge debt load that many of these poor countries have. And that happens at every concert.